overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change, to create a brand new life.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
Oh, thank you so much. I love those last words, and I am stronger every moment, every day. We had a beautiful revealing service this morning, and one of the things that was shared was how we have to be impeccable with our word. You know, Ernest Holmes says in The Science of Mind, he quotes Moses, who says, "The word is in your mouth, a blessing or a curse, according to how you use it." And Jody Rutenberg was reflecting when she first came to the center, how I would say things like, when people would say, "Oh, it's so hard. Oh, it's so hard." And I would say, "Well, what if you just change that and say it's getting easier?" That's your first thing in spiritual coaching. You know, if you keep saying it's hard, it's going to be hard. If you think you can't do it, you can't. But if you say, "It's getting easier. Standing up in public is getting easier," when you know that you're not the one that's doing the work, that spirit is, you are an instrument and the spirit is expressing through you. Wow. Then could I get up and open myself and surrender the fact that I think I know what I'm going to say and allow this something that is so much greater than me to reveal itself yet again? And that's the invitation for all of us, especially around the holiday season, is to allow this imprisoned splendor to find its way through and out in each of us. And spirit wants to express, it wants to reveal itself. I was talking to Adam earlier. He's speaking on simplicity. And we had this wonderful, wonderful talk about simplicity. And I said, you know, once you set your mind that you're going to speak on simplicity, simplicity is going to court you from every corner. And of course, the second person that shared was Michael. And Michael said, you know, the truth is so profoundly simple, I make it complicated. And then Adam looked at me and he said, "Yep, yep, there it is. It's simple, but I make it complicated. Yep, got it. Check." What if it is so painfully simple that it's never been about you? We want to make it about us. It's always been about this something that we all share, this presence, this light. And this month I'm talking about centers of light. You know, we call ourselves the Center for Spiritual Living. We were previously the Center for Conscious Living, but now because we want to have a mass marketing plan, they chose to get rid of conscious and call it spiritual. But we could call ourselves centers of light as well, that we're light beings. It is very interesting. I pulled out my old Ernest Holmes papers. Must be 1,000 words in this. He was an extremely verbose man. And he was, for his time, a center for light. And he spoke a lot about light. So I pulled him up this morning and I said, "What would Uncle Ernie say about light?" And he said, "I would like to talk about the concept of light in the universe. In the temple over the altar, a light was always shining. The light, of course, always is a symbol of the life that we share that is never extinguished." You know, death is a part of life. And Gigi and I were talking earlier when I got to the center about a dear friend of ours who's getting close to their transition, 99 years of age, contemplating maybe this is their last Christmas. And I said, "But isn't it funny? The light is never extinguished. The light that we are is eternal." Now, could we know that? It's such a simple thing, Adam. It's such a simple thing. But we confuse the container for the light. Helen Street, one of my great models, I would see her. You know, we teach by example, and she would go to a seminar, and I'd see her standing on the steps, talking to everybody. She'd get on her knees when someone was in a wheelchair, and I saw her as this radiant light. That's what I saw. Now, it's the light in me that saw the light in her. And I said, "Helen, you're so radiant." And she says, "You know, that's a problem, David, because people confuse the lamp for the light." And she said, "It's not Helen. Helen is just the instrument for the light." Ernest Holmes is saying the same thing. So he says, "You are the candle of the Lord." He loved to quote scripture. "Ye are the light of the world, saith scripture. So let your light so shine," excuse me, "let your light so shine that men, seeing your good works, shall glorify your Father which is in heaven." We need a good little scriptural reading every now and then. Let your light so shine. So Ernest Holmes, Jesus himself, in the Hebrew scriptures, when God said, "Let there be light," the light that he spoke about was the Shekinah, the light within. In the Islamic tradition, they talk about Nur ala Nur, light upon light. All the great teachers have talked about light. Buddha, be a light unto yourself. Ah, there's an original thought. So he says, now this light is real. There is such a light at the center of everything, and you might someday, in ordinary affairs, not realizing it, look up and see that the light, and see the light, and you might see it everywhere, and you might see it in all things. There is a light at the center of everyone, but it does seem that while by reason of any fact, this light is never obliterated, it is only obscured. In other words, you put your light under a bushel. You've hid your light to the world. You're playing small with yourself. You're not letting this light shine. So what if I could strip you of all your false identities and expose the light that you are so that you could shine fully radiant as the expression of what you really are? Lastly, he says, there is a light in every organ of the physical body. And if any organ would be restored to its vibration of pure light, it would become healed. Because the light is the pattern of that thing. You see, everything individualized is universalized. And he goes on for 20 pages speaking about that light. And at the very end, he says, each one of us should seek that beam of light because it is here, and follow it to a greater light. Light is the everlasting light that surrounds everything, and light will light your path then. So this is the light that is spoken of, that lighteth every man's path, and humans, and women's, and animals, and trees, I would say. And as you believe that you live, believe that you are the light. And as you believe in the possibility of your own soul, believe in God. He was a little scriptural. And as you believe in God, will then believe in yourself, because they are not separate. Ernest Holmes, in the Holmes Papers, 60, 70 years ago, speaking about the very thing that we are. So today, this month, I started by saying where we meet. And we meet in the moment. And I pulled out my beautiful John O'Donohue, that mystic from Ireland. And John O'Donohue says, you know, if you've lived through life and you've had some hardships, he says, in those hardships, you cultivate, you quarry, his word was, you quarry a very precious light. When you've had a heartbreak, you know, a broken heart is an open heart. So when that heart is broken open, there is a light that is there that is very precious that sustains you through those troubled times. He says that light is available. Jude knows what I'm talking about. She came here a year ago, and her heart was broken. She's coming here, and she's shining her light bright today. It's been a whole year, you know? And so what if in that quarried light that you found a year ago, that it sustains you, and it helps you meet those moments when those troubled times come again, and they will come. There will be death. There will be loss. There will be hardship. There will be heartbreak. And in those times, we find that light that we cultivated way back when. It's right there. It's just waiting for us to turn to it. Oh, how sweet is that? How sweet is that? So if you're as old as I am, and you've been around a lot of heartbreaking experiences, the only place to go is not into the limited idea of what I've lost, but what can't be lost. You know, what is still there? Now, if there's been a lot of death, and I was one of those that lived in the 80s when the AIDS crisis was hitting the country, and I must have held I don't know how many young men as they died in my arms. And what I know now is that they didn't die. Their bodies died, but they're still here. And probably they've reincarnated. Our little girl, our little dog died a year ago. It was 1 year and 1 month and 10 days ago that she died. See, that's how strange it is. You keep those dates in your head. And then Jody, in an inimitable way, she sends a photograph of a little dog named Annabelle, who's 11 weeks old, that is the spitting image of baby Speck, and she's chewing on a bone. And you know, it just ripped my heart open and Trey's heart open. And Trey said, she's a puppy. We don't do puppies. I said, but she's so cute. So I said to Jody, I said, can we postpone it till January? And she says, you can adopt her now and we'll hold her till January. So that's just a thought that's operating in mind, but I'm not going to feed it too much because then it'll create angst within the soul. Yeah. So this light that we are is seeking our attention. And Where the light seems to arise, oftentimes, is from the depths of our being. It arises sometimes in the darkest times. You know, they say the lights are the brightest in the skies. Bill Savoy knows this. When the sky is the darkest, the lights are the brightest. So what if the paradox is that when we go through dark times, or when we go into the depths of our being, and the class that I'm going to be teaching in the new year is called A Simpler Way, because one of my students said so wisely, David, sometimes your classes are so complicated and so scientific and so cerebral. And so I wanted the simplest way. Again, what Adam said, we complicate it when it's really very simple. So Richard Rohr's little book called Just This, he's a Franciscan monk, and he talks about the contemplative path. And he starts off by saying, it's all about shifting your operating system. He's saying the same thing as Locke Kelly. You're seeing with new eyes. You're seeing with the eyes of the open heart. You're seeing with the eyes of the awakened mind. And when you see with this different operating system, things appear differently. We have a poster in the bookstore that says, when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. So instead of being a problem that needs to be fixed, it's an opportunity for a major transformation. What if we saw our families not as problems to be fixed, but we saw them as a beautiful opportunity for us to love them unconditionally and accept them where they are? It's a whole different way of approaching it, isn't it? When I went to Colorado to study with Matt Licata and Jeff Foster, they had a very simple practice, again, simple and not complicated, and it was the little word rain, R-A-I-N. And they teach it in a lot of non-dual teachings. The R stands for recognize what is happening in your life. It just is. The dog died. You know, my friend has cancer. I got laid off from my job. I don't have enough money to pay rent. You recognize what it is. Then the second thing is fully accept it. The A. If you resist it, you're creating suffering. Tia and I were talking about this. Shay's got a sickness, and he's in such struggle with it. And I said, remind your sweet husband, it's resistance that's creating the suffering. She said, I will. But it is the resistance to it. So if you're sick, and if you have a bum leg, you know, I was sharing with Jane. Jane had a situation with her leg, and she said, I'm so angry at my leg because it's not working the way it should. And Humphrey fell, and he twisted his leg, and he can only walk on threes. Now, I didn't say, Humphrey, get angry at your leg. I said, let's kiss the boo-boo and make it better. And we took him to the vet, and we had him put a little cortisone in it. And then I started giving him pain medication and chondroitin glucosamine pills. And you know what? And a little massage. And after 3 days of not being able to walk on his leg, this morning he was running. So what if you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change? And recognize that Humphrey's got a limp. I accept that limp and full responsibility. Because maybe he jumped off the bed and he's too fat. And maybe he needs to lose a few pounds. I can take full responsibility. The I, then, of the rain is investigate. What is this saying to you? You've recognized that there's an obstacle here. There's some kind of challenge. Your life isn't working the way you thought it would. This is an invitation, I. It's to investigate and to be intimate with the very thing that you've created as the problem. It is really the opening. It is not the problem. It is the opening. Holy cow. The only way out of anything is into it. There's another thing for your coaching. So you say, let's go into it, and we'll find. And then the N is the best of all. You nourish it. You nurture it. We were talking about fears and overcoming fears. We're not here to overcome fears. We're here to embrace the fear. And when the fear is embraced, it's no longer frightening because you've held it. You've nurtured it. So it's an act of violence when we try to get rid of something. We try to get rid of our fearful self. We try to get rid of the worry. That worried self needs to be brought in. And Adam was saying, you know, when he's so peaceful all the time, when he goes to a funeral and people are grieving, he says, I want to infect them with my peace. And I suggested, well, why don't you just walk in there as peace, the embodiment of peace, and after a while, the grief wants to go into the arms of peace. When baby Speck was chased off by the coyotes on Cape Cod and she was out all night and we found her in the morning shivering under a bush, shaking like a leaf, and we couldn't get her out of her fierce space. She was in PTSD, puppy dog, whatever. And I called my dog whisperer, Jody, and Jody, in the depths of her wisdom, said, you're no good to her if you go where she is. She said, if you can be that space of peace, then she will ultimately take refuge in that. It's not about you fixing her. It's about you nourishing her. So recognize that the coyotes chased her. Accept that she survived, thank God. Investigate, how can I be there as a loving space? And then just nourish the heck out of that little dog. She stayed neurotic for the rest of her life. And you know what? I kept loving on her. We were going through the stuff at home, and it's very good at the end of the year to clean out house and get rid of the stuff that you no longer need. And I found all her toys that she used to play with. and they're all ripped apart, you know, the neck of the elephant and the ears of the giraffe and she would shred them, but they were so dear. But I just couldn't get rid of them. And then I found her thunder shirt because she was so terrified of thunder. We'd wrap her in the thunder shirt. I said, should we throw it out, Trey? And he said, you know, we might get another dog someday that has the same malady and is afraid of the thunder and the lightning. And so I justified keeping that because I was attached. And, you know, I see her everywhere. And that's part of recognizing that they don't die. If you've loved anybody, they're still here. You know, they're still here. My beloved friend Pam, she lost her sister recently, and she's grieving it. And she sent me a text, and she said, I keep calling on Etika, a beloved friend of ours that made her transition a year and a half ago. I keep calling on Etika. Would you be there for my sister? And I said, call her, because she is there. And that's the wisdom from the deep. They don't really go anywhere. So I pulled out Mark Nepo, his wonderful book, The Endless Practice, we've taught here at the center. He had cancer twice. And he thought at one stage of his life that I have my whole life planned. I'm going to, you know, he had created this idea and he was a successful writer and he was on Oprah and he had it all made. And then he gets cancer. Everything completely changed. And he beats cancer that time. He gets cancer a second time. He nearly dies. And every time he comes back different. And so he says, when I learn to get off the horse and I'm driving the horse of my ambitions, moving through life and let the horse of life take me where I need to go, I stop getting those extra degrees that I thought would make me a better person. I have a degree in everything. And let me tell you, they don't mean anything. Even when I was a bartender in San Francisco, I got a degree to make drinks in a bar. I was making Mai Tais and Singapore slings and golden Cadillacs. Who drinks that kind of stuff? You know, that's what happens when you go to school to get an advanced degree. So in this lovely little book, if you're going to find the shimmering things in the deep, Mark Nepo says, first you have to go to the deep. And we're a culture that's afraid to go to the deep, afraid to go within. We taught our last class this Wednesday at the Locke Kelly class, The Way of Effortless Mindfulness. And Phyllis Blaha, beautiful Phyllis, they have their end projects. She did an acronym of GLIMPSE because his whole premise is based on the GLIMPSE system. We're glimpsing the divine everywhere. It's everywhere. That's what Ernest Holmes says. It's shining from every rock, from every tree, from every little girl, from every old man. It's everywhere. It's from every puppy dog, from every cricket, from every dragonfly. It's shining out in the world. But if you don't see it, what point is there? And so Phyllis did this little acronym of GLIMPSE, and I was trying to remember it in my dreams. The G stands for grateful or grace. Grace. Okay. But let me tell you what I found, and you can correct me later, Phyllis. Grace, looking inside, the next, meets presence, shining everywhere. GLIMPSE. Did I spell it correctly? Yeah. Grace, looking inside, meets presence, shining, it applies to my talk, shining everywhere. So when we look in, we find this something that is shining everywhere, and we get glimpses of it, but we have to look within. So, and you know, the students did an absolutely brilliant job because each one looked within, and from the light within, they shared their truths. That's what's going to be this Friday night when my beautiful speakers are going to come to that place of the light within, and simplicity will speak about simplicity, and the light and dark will speak about light and dark, and love and the creative process will speak from itself, and they're merely the instruments for that revelation. That's what I absolutely know. So he says this. He says, every spiritual tradition leads us through suffering to the mystical moment when we're asked to put down all protection and relax the boundaries of our identity so that we can be touched by the unity of life that waits under everything, and so that we can be changed and grow. Sometimes life gives you these 2x4s for you to grow and change. They're not bad 2x4s. They're necessary 2x4s. And when we stop resisting them, see, the resistance is where the suffering, and we say, oh, life has given me this growth opportunity again. There's a wonderful, another acronym, A-G-O. A-G-O, another life growth opportunity. Boom! Another, it's called an algo. Another of life's growth opportunities. Boom! Okay. The unity of life that waits under everything is so that we can grow and be changed. And those moments that change everything and sustain everything permeate us because we are courageous enough to go deep within, going forward, pursuing some kind of idea that we have of our life, we must go deep if we want to find those shining things. So to open this depth requires facing sacred moments, which are everywhere. They're in the music that we hear. They're in the sudden truth that stops us in our tracks. They're in the realization that what we've been carrying around need to be born now within us. We've been carrying this potential for a whole lifetime. Could we let it flower? Could we let it emerge instead of lying dormant? You know, last week I talked about Plato, who said, we're born whole, but we need each other to be complete. So what if that seed is born with the potential, an acorn, to be an oak tree, but it needs the soil and the light and the water for it to crack open and for that life to emerge, just like each of us needs certain things. And we need each other to hold each other, to see the truth when we get lost. When Jude was so lost last year, and so I just put my arms around her and loved her into wholeness, and look what came out, this radiant light that's creating a whole new life for herself. I can see it. Okay, so they call these sacred moments. Entering such moments completely lets us feel and taste our universal being that brings all things alive. And facing sacred moments requires us to engage the paradox of being ourselves all the while losing ourselves.
Oh, what do you mean, losing ourselves? Well, that doesn't make sense. Like a bird, you know, well, you mean I have to lose myself to find myself? Well, I think maybe you do. Well, what are you losing? Well, you're just losing the image that you have of yourself. The less than image, not enough image. You know, I got to be this image. What if you let that image go and you discover there's a whole new me inside, ready to emerge?
Wow. He says, for the raindrop, and that's why metaphors are so powerful. He goes into metaphor. For the raindrop, it finds joy when it enters the river. Huh. In joining with all that is larger than itself, the raindrop doesn't lose its substance, but surrenders its shape and its precious identity as a little raindrop. It doesn't vanish, but it relaxes its boundaries and joins something much larger than itself. It both loses itself and it maintains itself. Now, Rumi, one of his wonderful poems was about the drop in the ocean. And he would say, oh, drop, give it up. To be pursued by the ocean, to be wooed by the ocean. Oh, drop, the ocean for a drop? Let yourself fall into that ocean of being, that ocean of love, that ocean of presence, and let it be what you are, that ocean of light. Wow. And then, you know, when you study, it was a Brick Medicine Eagle, who is this shamanic teacher. She talked about everything on life as a hologram of light. And each of us are shards of light, like from the one light. And she describes the soul as a light from spirit. So what if spirit is another metaphor, is this great light of the universe, you know? And let there be light. So here's this light. God said, let there be light. And we are that light. And from that light come all these shafts, all these beautiful souls that come out. And then they need something. They need an instrument to manifest. So they create a body. So the body is the instrument for the light. So are we a soul with a body or a body with a soul? Big difference. I would say that you are an eternal, luminous soul who has a temporary milk carton called a body. And there's an expiration date. And only the universe knows what that expiration date is. And sometimes you throw the milk out early, but sometimes you grow to be 99 or 112. And does that light diminish? No, that light just shines. It's what it is. So at the end of this expose on light, he goes on to say this. In feeling where my own depth touches the oneness, I can feel the breath of everyone living. There's that idea of oneness. You know, I was at this Circle of Love gathering, and Sharon Hudson, who's the now president of CSL, she said, you know, I used to treat for the perfect man to be my husband. I had three husbands that were disasters. Then I treated for a life partner to share my soul with, and I've had the most wonderful relationship with a man in my life for the last 20 years. And she says, now my prayer, my treatment is only for one thing, is to know the depths of oneness. And to know the depths of oneness, we have to be like that drop that is willing to dissolve into the ocean and to experience that this is me and this is me and this is me. This is all me. And even me is the stuff of the people that I don't relate to, the ones that I call the stranger or the enemy. That is me too. It's all me. Then everything is, you're on a new operating system, he say.
So, and that breath, the breath that ties me to every living thing, that breath sustains me. It gives me strength beyond what I have as an individual, a strength now to be vulnerable and to stay vulnerable, to have the face of my heart kiss the face of your heart. To have the face of my heart kiss the face of your heart. To have the face of my heart kiss the face of your heart. Wow, because it's only one heart. To meet in the heart. The heart knows oneness. Where the head wants to be duplicitous, right and wrong, good and bad, yours and mine, heart just loves. So what if the truth is, the new operating system, that you are love itself, and we can have hope, Gene, that this love will emerge through the Homo Universalis when we become a new human species. No longer the human that sees ourselves as separate, but a humanity that sees itself as one. He says, seeing this from the perspective of all life, and not just my life, is that the unfolding we all meet is revealed as a series of initiations and not wrong turns. Then everything we go through opens us to a greater sense of being, and we don't linger in the ruins. Everything we go through, hear this, everything we go through opens us to a greater sense of being if we don't linger in the ruins. Does anybody know what lingering in the ruins looks like? Oh, good. There's another metaphor. I'm not talking about going to a burned-out building. I'm talking about living in the wound of the pain body that creates a story around it ad nauseum, ad infinitum. I think that's a word, ad infinitum, until we're ready to get out of the ruins. And lastly, he says, waking in this body that has carried me all these years, I can finally say that I want nothing. You know what wanting begets? Wanting begets wanting. Wanting tells the universe you don't have. Ah, yeah. So he says, I want nothing. I only want this day and tomorrow if there should be one. I want to close my eyes so that I can see the sun within me. I know Kenny's anxious to go play in the sun outside, but what if I told you the sun is within you, Kenny? And to open then to this sun that's also without. To open my long history to the spot where there is no history. And opening my mind to the waterfall of aliveness that allows me to perceive with all this, there is no room for want. There's no room for want when you live in the grateful heart and you realize that everything's already been given. Wow. Then your operating system is different. Then you're operating. And I changed that glimpse. The first one, Phyllis, we had grace. I put gratefully, you know, gratefully look within. When you're living in a consciousness of gratitude, when you are constantly saying yes to what life brings, you find the blessing even in the hardships, even in the heartbreak. You know, I think it was Adam or it was maybe Michael that said the broken heart's an open heart, and they heard it at a deeper level. And so when this heart, and my heart breaks all the times, in the arms of an angel, every time I see that on the TV, ASPCA, and that dog is looking in the cage and she's shaken. Oh my God. And I turn it off. I can't stand it. And lately I've been saying, I'm going to sit through that because I'm going to send love to those puppies that are shaking in the cages and the kittens that have no home because I can be present. I can be that nurturing space when there is suffering in the world. It's a whole different way of seeing it. So then it's saying, I don't want suffering. When the little girl cries, I put my arms around her. I don't say, stop your crying. I say, here are the arms to hold you when you're upset. What if it's a different way of approaching life? And then those things that come from the deep always surprise us. To live in a state of surprise, of curiosity. How is life giving me another glimpse of the divine? So lastly, I went to my guru, which is the gardener, because I'm just a big gardener of the soul. And my job is to nurture the seeds of potential that are not just in the little seed, but they're within each one of us. And when I nurture it within myself, something flowers. And so when he said life is a series of initiations, of growth experiences, of shedding the old, it's very seasonal. We're very linked to nature. And in nature, we have to go through changes. If we're in a compact soil, we know that that could be a lifestyle that we're living in. We move to looser soil so that our roots can go down. Hopefully, coming to the center, you're getting spiritual roots. Coming to the root of the root of the self, you're not having a pablum spirituality where we're telling you what to think, but you're discovering how to think at a deeper level. So the gardener, this in this lovely little book, he's the guru throughout, and this is from Spain. And, you know, I'd read the whole book and got so enamored of each little story that I never went to the end. But at the end of the book of the gardener,
he goes off on a shamanic journey, kind of like a vision quest, and he gets naked in nature, and he merges with the trees and the rocks and the earth and the sun and the water, till he doesn't exist. All that exists is all that as him. And so he comes away with a different perception. Remember, all of this is to change the way we see. And so this is the perception that the gardener came away with after having gone on his vision quest into nature. He said, and finally he understood that the earth was his garden, not just the patch that he tended. This whole earth is his garden. The beloved present that life gave him from the eternal night of his conception on the shores of time. And he knew that the stars were shining there for him, and that the sun blazed for him, and that the eternal had kept the corner for him in the irremediable brilliance of its blinding light, shining from the deep within him. He said, and his illumined soul swelled with life, and he cried out to the sun and to the moon and to life and to death, with tears of joy coming down his face. The dream has finished. The dream has finished. I am awake. The dream, the illusion, is finished. I'm no longer perceiving myself as somebody struggling to achieve X, Y, or Z. The dream has fallen away, and I see clearly now. So what if the thing that awakens in us is this light of awareness? That's what Locke Kelly calls it. He calls it a spacious awareness. And this spacious awareness that we are, it doesn't have an agenda. It doesn't have a belief system. And then you realize that all belief comes from the ego. Ah. And when we stop identifying with the egoic belief system and we begin to discover what doesn't need belief, because belief is causative. It says in the Bible, it's done unto you as you believe. That's the law. So if you believe some people are evil, well, then you have categorized them as evil, you know? I can remember growing up as a little boy, they would say things about the gay person in the church, and it scared the bejeebies out of me until I had to get a new operating system and say they were misinformed. You know, we're all God's children, no matter what you choose in your lifestyle. And then there's a bigger space for which to see the world. So we're invited by coming here to get that bigger perception, to get a God's eye view, to let the light wake up within, because it's not you and I that wake up. It's the light that wakes up within. And when it does, it sees, it gets to see, not just with the two eyes, but we get to see with the third eye, if you will. We get to see with the eyes of the heart. We get to see with the eyes of oneness. And things look completely different. There is no other. I saw on Facebook somebody posted that famous quote that Gigi's been telling me, and it was about a Lutheran minister in Germany. It says, they came for the communists. And I said, I'm not a communist. So they took the communist. They came for the socialist. I said, I'm not a socialist. They took the socialist. They came for the union workers. And they said, I said, I'm not a union person. They took the union person. They came for the Jews. They took the Jews. And when they came for me, there was no one left to stand up. So what if we get to see things not with closed eyes of them and us, but we get to see that it is all us? And that creates then a sense of oneness, a sense of connection. And if there's anything, it's this beautiful sense of connection. Light upon light, nur ala nur. Didn't you love the way he said, the light in my heart kisses the light in your heart? Mark Nepo. Could we meet in that beautiful smile of the heart? So let's just go within to our own light. It's right there at the depths of our being. Ralph Waldo Emerson says, deep calling unto deep always responds. So the deep in us calls unto the deep of the universe. That spacious field of awareness that is filled with unconditional love, that is fully awake and alive. And that awake, alive love is within all creation. And so we experience it within ourselves first, and then we feel it in this room, all around, that same light, that same awake awareness. That same presence, light, is shining within all the different little lamps in this room. So now imagine, metaphorically, I take off the lampshade, and your light is even more radiant. The light is shining even brighter. Just because I've taken that which we've hidden our light under, in this case a lampshade, an identity, a belief system, an agenda, and we've lifted off that agenda, and that belief and that story. Sometimes the stories are the densest thing to keep our light from shining. So we'll just lift off the narrative and the story that we're telling. And we feel that that light now is shining, unencumbered. And it's merging with the lights all around us in the room. If you've ever seen a burning coal in a fire, and then another coal comes next to it, after a while, they're all burning white hot. And so imagine all these lights merging with the lights around, and we're creating a collective light. And that light is shining out from this little center of spiritual living, and it's radiating out on the planet. And it's meeting any darkness that needs the light. And the darkness cries unto the light, and the light responds, yes, I am here for you. And so we recognize the darkness in the world, and we allow the light within our being to shine, and we invite it to move out wherever it needs to go. Imagine that it's going exactly where it needs to be. And then we nurture. We nurture ourselves, we nurture the world, not as something separate, but as our own intimate self. Now feel that connection, that ineffable connection. Ineffable meaning you can't really put it into words, but yet you feel this connection. Huh. And then the scripture says, we let it shine, we let it shine, we let it shine. And the darkness comprehendeth it not, because the light has filled the world. From one little light right there from the deep, shining within each all of us. How sweet, how simple, and yet how profound. Open your eyes, lift your fingers, wiggle your lights, shimmer away, knowing all is well.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.